Chapter 2. Long Waves, Short Memories. The wave form is beautiful. The sound of the ocean beating against the sand is evidence that order exists in nature. When you consider the physics of a wave form, it becomes even more beautiful. It is matter displaying the tendency to invert. The energy that makes the wave rise is the same energy that makes it fall. When you consider the mathematical properties of the wave form, it becomes more fascinating still. 1500 years ago, an Indian mathematician discovered that if you plot every possible ratio between two sides of a triangle, it produces a wave-like pattern. Medieval scholars called it a sine. Today, we call the smooth, repetitive waves found in nature sine waves. An electrical current moves in the form of a sine wave. So does sound. So does light. And there are waves within waves. To a surfer, waves seem to come in sets, growing in size so that the sixth or seventh is the big one that you want to catch. In fact, this is just the result of a longer, flatter wave moving through the short ones. This relationship of long waves to short ones is a source of order in acoustics. For musicians, the harmonics created by short waves within longer waves are what gives each instrument its particular sound. Music is in tune when long and short waves are in strict mathematical proportion. Waves are ubiquitous in nature. In fact, at the subatomic level, the wave-like movement of a particle is the only way we can know it exists. But waves also exist within big, complex and unnatural systems, such as markets. For those who analyse stock markets, the wave form has become like a religious icon. They use tools to filter out the noise of daily fluctuations to produce a predictive curve. Peaks and troughs have become everyday economic terms. But in economics, the wave form can be dangerous. It can imply order and regularity where there is none. A sound wave simply decays into silence. But waves generated from random data become distorted and disrupted after a time. And the economy is a world of complex, random events, not simple waves. It was the wave chart experts of the last boom who failed to predict the slump. In surfing terms, they were looking at waves instead of sets, sets instead of tides, tides instead of the tsunami that was about to hit them. We think of a tsunami as a big wave, a wall of water. In fact, a tsunami is a long wave. It swells and it keeps on coming. For the man who discovered their existence in economics, long waves proved fatal. Death by firing squad. The prisoner shuffles. He can't walk. He is partially blind, has chronic heart disease and clinical depression. "There is no way that I can force myself to think systematically," he writes. "To think scientifically at all without actively working on materials and books and with headaches is very difficult." Nikolai Kondratiev had spent 8 years as a political prisoner in Suzdal, east of Moscow, reading only the books and newspapers permitted by Stalin's secret police. He had shivered in winter and sweltered in summer, but his ordeal would soon be over. On the 17th of September 1938, the day his original sentence expired, Kondratiev was tried a second time, convicted of anti-Soviet activity, and executed in his cell by firing squad. Thus perished one of the giants of 20th century economics. In his time, Kondratiev ranked alongside globally influential thinkers such as Keynes, Schumpeter, Hayek, and Gini. His crimes were fabricated. An underground peasant labour party, of which he was supposed to be the leader, did not exist. Kondratiev's real crime, in the eyes of his persecutors, was to think the unthinkable about capitalism, that instead of collapsing under crisis, capitalism generally adapts and mutates. In two pioneering works of data mining, he showed that beyond short-term business cycles, there is evidence of a longer, 50-year pattern whose turning points coincide with major structural changes within capitalism and major conflicts. Thus, these moments of extreme crisis and survival were not evidence of chaos, but of order. Kondratiev was the first person to show the existence of long waves in economic history. Though it was later popularized as a wave theory, Kondratiev's most valuable insight was to understand why the global economy goes through sudden change, why capitalism hits structural crisis, and how it morphs and mutates in response. He showed us why business ecosystems that have lasted for decades can suddenly implode. He used the term long cycle rather than wave because cycles in scientific thought create a sublanguage that is highly useful. We speak of phases, states, and their sudden alternation. Kondratiev studied industrial capitalism. Though others claim to have found long waves in prices going back to the Middle Ages, his data series begins with the Industrial Revolution of the 1770s. In Kondratiev's theory, each long cycle has an upswing lasting about 25 years, fueled by the deployment of new technologies and high capital investment. Then, a downswing of about the same length, usually ending with a depression. In the up phase, recessions are rare. In the down phase, they are frequent. In the up phase, capital flows to productive industries. In the down phase, it gets trapped in the finance system. There's more, but that's the basic theory. In this chapter, I will argue that it is essentially right, but that the present crisis represents a disruption of the pattern, and that signals this is something bigger than the end of a 50-year cycle. The man himself was supremely cautious about the implications of his theory. He never claimed he could predict events, though he did predict the depression of the 1930s, 10 years before it happened. He arranged for his findings to be published alongside a brutal critique and peer review. But Stalin's police had, in a way, understood more about Kondratiev's theory than he did himself. They understood that, if pursued to its conclusion, it would bring Marxism face to face with a dangerous proposition, that there is no final crisis of capitalism. There can be chaos, panic, and revolution, but on the basis of Kondratiev's evidence, capitalism's tendency is not to collapse, but rather to mutate. Huge swathes of capital can be destroyed, business models can be scrapped, empires can be liquidated in global wars, but the system survives, albeit in a different form. To the orthodox Marxism of the 1920s, Kondratiev's explanation of what caused these transformations was equally dangerous. The events that seemed to cause the big turning points, wars, revolutions, discovery of new gold deposits and new colonies were, he said, mere effects generated by the demands of the economy itself. Humanity, even as it tries to shape economic history, is relatively powerless over the long term. For a time, in the 1930s, long wave theory became influential in the West. The Austrian economist Joseph Schumpeter produced his own theory of business cycles, popularizing the term Kondratiev wave. But once capitalism stabilized after 1945, long wave theory seemed redundant. Economists believed state intervention could flatten out even the minor ups and downs of capitalism. As for a 50-year cycle, the guru of Keynesian economics, Paul Samuelson, dismissed it as science fiction. And when the New Left tried to revive Marxism as a critical social science in the 1960s, they had little time for Kondratiev and his waves. They were looking for a theory of capitalist breakdown, not survival. Only a few diehards, mainly investors, remained obsessed with Kondratiev. In the 1980s, Wall Street analysts turned his careful provisional findings into a bunch of crude, predictive mumbo-jumbo. In place of his complex data, they drew simple lines showing a wave with a stylized shape, a surge, a plateau, a crisis, and a collapse. They called it the K-wave. If Kondratiev was right, these investors said, the economic recovery that began in the late 1940s was the start of a 50-year cycle, which meant that sometime around the end of the 1990s there should be a depression. They built complex investment strategies to hedge against the catastrophe, and then they waited. What Kondratiev really said. In 2008, what the investors were waiting for finally happened, though, for reasons we'll come to, 10 years later than expected. Now, people in the mainstream are once again interested in long cycles. As it dawned on them that the Lehman crisis was systemic, analysts began to look for patterns produced by the interplay of tech innovation and growth. In 2010, economists at Standard Chartered announced that we were in the middle of a global supercycle. Carlota Perez, an Anglo-Venezuelan economist and follower of Schumpeter, harnessed wave theory to promise a new golden age for capitalism if it could only shrug off financial panic and return to the state-funded innovation process that produced the post-war boom. But to use Kondratiev's insight properly, we have to understand what he really said. His original research in the 1920s was based on data for five advanced economies between 1790 and 1920. It did not track GDP directly, but interest rates, wages, commodity prices, coal and iron production, and foreign trade. Using the most advanced statistical techniques of his time, and two assistants whose job title was computer, he established a trend line out of the raw data. He divided the data against population size and smoothed it out using a 9-year moving average to filter out random fluctuations and shorter cycles. The result was a collection of charts that look like shallow sine waves. They show the first long cycle, beginning with the emergence of the factory system in Britain in the 1780s and ending around 1849. Then, a much clearer second wave starts in 1849, coinciding with the global deployment of railways, steamships and the telegraph, before entering its downswing phase with the so-called Long Depression after 1873, and ending sometime in the 1890s. By the early 1920s, Kondratiev believed there was a third cycle underway. It had reached its peak and begun its downswing probably sometime between 1914 and 1920, but this downswing was nowhere near finished. As a result, he predicted, the political crisis that consumed Europe between 1917 and 1921 would not lead to immediate economic collapse. A shaky recovery was possible, Kondratiev argued, before a depression yet to come. This was completely borne out by events. Unlike today's Wall Street analysts, Kondratiev was not ultimately interested in the shapes of the waves themselves. He saw the sine waves he'd plotted onto graph paper as evidence of something deeper happening in reality. A succession of alternating phases, which for our purposes are the most useful tools to understand the 50-year cycles. Let's consider in more depth these phases, as Kondratiev described them. The first, up phase, typically begins with a frenetic decade of expansion accompanied by wars and revolutions, in which new technologies that were invented in the previous downturn are suddenly standardized and rolled out. Next, a slowdown begins, caused by the reduction of capital investment, the rise of savings, and the hoarding of capital by banks and industry. It is made worse by the destructive impact of wars and the growth of non-productive military expenditure. However, this slowdown is still part of the up phase. Recessions remain short and shallow, while growth periods are frequent and strong. Finally, a down phase starts in which commodity prices and interest rates on capital both fall. There is more capital accumulated than can be invested in productive industries, so it tends to get stored inside the finance sector, depressing interest rates because the ample supply of credit depresses the price of borrowing. Recessions get worse and become more frequent. Wages and prices collapse, and finally a depression sets in. In all this, there is no claim as to the exact timing of events and no claim that the waves are regular. Kondratiev emphasized that each long wave takes place under new concrete historical conditions at a new level in the development of the productive forces and hence is by no means a simple repetition of the preceding cycle. It is, in short, more new than déjà vu. Now comes Kondratiev's most controversial point. He noticed that the start of each 50-year cycle was accompanied by trigger events. I will quote him in full, despite the old-fashioned language, because the parallels with the present are striking. During roughly the first two decades before the beginning of the rising wave of a long cycle, we observe an invigoration of technical inventions. Before and during the beginning of the rising wave, we observe the broad application of these inventions to industrial practice due to the reorganization of production relations. The beginning of the long cycles usually coincides with an expansion of the orbit of world economic relationships. Finally, the beginnings of the last two successive cycles were preceded by major changes in the extraction of precious metals and in monetary circulation. If we put that into English, we get the following. The start of a long cycle sees the rollout of new technologies, the rise of new business models, new countries dragged into the global market, and a rise in the quantity and availability of money. The relevance of this list to us is clear. It describes very well what happened to the global economy between the mid-1990s and the Lehman crash. But Kondratiev was convinced such phenomena were not causes, but only triggers. We are no way inclined to think that this provides any form of explanation for the causes of long cycles, he insisted. Kondratiev was determined to find the cause of long cycles in the economy, not in technology or global politics, and he was right. But in the search for it, he relied on theories that had been advanced by Karl Marx to explain the shorter 10-year business cycles of the 19th century, namely the exhaustion of capital investment and the need for reinvestment. If, he argued, the regular crises that come along every decade are the result of the need to replace tools and machines, then 50-year crises are probably caused by the quotes, wear and tear, replacement and increase in those basic capital goods requiring a long period of time and tremendous investment for their production. He had in mind, for example, the canal boom of the late 18th century and the railway boom of the 1840s. In Kondratiev's theory, a long wave takes off because large amounts of cheap capital have been accumulated, centralized and mobilized in the financial system, usually accompanied by a rise in the supply of money, which is needed to fund the investment boom. Grandiose investments are begun. Canals and factories in the late 18th century, railways and urban infrastructures in the mid-19th century. New technology is deployed and new business models created, leading to a struggle for new markets, which stimulates the intensification of wars as rivalries over colonial settlements increase. New social groups associated with the rising industries and technologies clash with the old elites, producing social unrest. Some of the details are obviously specific to each particular cycle, but what's important in Kondratiev's thesis is the argument about cause and effect. Takeoff is caused by capital accumulating faster than it is invested during the previous depression phase. One effect of this is the search for an expanded supply of money. Another is the increased availability of new, cheaper technologies. Once a new growth spurt begins, the effect is a spate of wars and revolutions. Kondratiev's insistence on economic causes and political, technological effects would come under attack from three directions. First, from Marxists, who insisted that the major turning points in capitalism could only be caused by external shocks. Secondly, from Schumpeter, his contemporary, who argued that long waves are driven by technology, not the rhythms of capital investment. A third set of critics said that, in any case, Kondratiev's data was at fault and that evidence of waves was overstated. But Kondratiev was right, and his arguments about causation brilliantly describe what has happened to the economy since 1945. If we can fill in the gaps in Kondratiev's theory, we come close to understanding not only how capitalism adapts and morphs in response to crisis, but why this capacity to adapt might reach its limits. I will argue, in part two, that we are living through a significant and likely permanent disruption of the patterns industrial capitalism has exhibited for 200 years. First, though, the critics have to be answered. The imaginary curve. In 1922, the publication of Kondratiev's first outline of long cycles sparked an immediate controversy. Leon Trotsky, at the time one of the top three leaders of Russian communism, wrote that if 50-year cycles existed, quotes, their character and duration are determined not by the internal interplay of capitalist forces, but by those external conditions through whose channel capitalist development flows. In the early 20th century, revolutionary Marxists had become obsessed with the idea that human action, the subjective will, was more important than economics. They felt trapped by economics, which had become the property of moderate socialists who believed revolution was impossible. Kondratiev, Trotsky insisted, had got things the wrong way round. He wrote, "The acquisition by capitalism of new countries and continents, the discovery of new natural resources, and in the wake of these, such major facts of superstructural order as wars and revolutions, determine the character and the replacement of ascending, stagnating, or declining epochs of capitalist development." It may seem strange to those who know Marxism only as a form of economic determinism, but Trotsky was here insisting that political conflict between nations and classes was more important than economic forces. Instead of the long waves, Trotsky argued that Soviet economics should concentrate on explaining, quotes, the entire curve of capitalist development, from birth to takeoff to decline. That is, its whole history. Long waves were interesting, but to those who desired the end of capitalism, the most vital pattern of all was capitalism's complete life cycle, which must surely be finite. Marxists had, by now, evolved their own explanation of the big mutation in business structures after 1890, which they dubbed imperialism, and which they presumed was the final or highest stage capitalism could reach. So confronted with Kondratiev's data, Trotsky too drew a curve entirely the product of his imagination. It showed the takeoff and decline of an imagined capitalist country over 90 years. The purpose of the chart, Trotsky explained, was to show what a full and painstaking computation of the data might produce. According to him, once you understood the trend line of a capitalist economy, you could understand whether a 50-year cycle, if it existed at all, was part of the overall upswing, downswing, or the end. Trotsky made no apology for the imaginary nature of his curve. The data was not yet good enough to draw a real one, he said, though, with work, it might be done. Trotsky's 1922 attack was used then and has been used since to refute the idea of long cycles, but it does not. It simply says they are A, not likely to be regular, caused as they are by external shocks, and B, need to be fitted into a bigger single waveform that is the rise and decline of capitalism itself. Put another way, Trotsky was calling for a better and more historic definition of the trend against which the 50-year cycles were computed. This in itself was logical. With all trends, statisticians look for what they call a trend break, a clear point where the curve stops rising, flattens out, and prepares for a fall. The search for a trend break within capitalism was to obsess left-wing economists throughout the 20th century and, ultimately, elude them. Meanwhile, Kondratiev had been busy. A cold room in Moscow. In January 1926, Kondratiev published his definitive work, Long Cycles of the Conjuncture. On the 6th of February, the cream of Soviet economics gathered at Kondratiev's think tank, the Institute for Conjuncture, above Tverskaya Street in Moscow, to rip it to shreds. The verbatim record of the meeting contains none of the fear and irrationality that Stalin's purges would soon inject into Soviet academic life. The participants speak freely and harshly. They pursue the same three lines of attack that have dominated criticism of Kondratiev ever since. That his statistical methods were wrong, that he'd misunderstood the causes of the waves, and that the political conclusions were unacceptable. First, Kondratiev's main opponent, economist Dmitry Oparin, argued that the method he had used to smooth out shorter cycles was false and had distorted the results. In addition, long-term data on the rise and fall of savings did not support Kondratiev's theory. Then the seminar turned to the issue of cause and effect. The economist V.E. Bogdanov argued that instead of the rhythm of the long cycles being dictated by capital investment, it must be dictated by innovation. This makes him the first person to reduce the long cycle theory to a history of technological innovation, but not the last. Bogdanov, however, raised a valid point. It was not logical, he argued, that the cost of building big things, such as canals, railways, or steel mills, should dictate the rhythm of the world economy over 50 years. The objection to a capital-driven cycle led him to propose a tech-driven one, and on this basis he then advanced a more rigorous version of Trotsky's external shock argument. If long waves did exist, they must, according to Bogdanov, be caused by the random intersection of two essentially causal series, the internal dynamics of capitalism and those of the external, non-capitalist environment. For example, the crisis of non-capitalist societies such as China and the Ottoman Empire in the late 19th century created new openings for Western capital. The agrarian backwardness of a country like Russia shaped the growth of its capitalist sector, forcing it to seek funds from France and Britain. Bogdanov had a point. Kondratiev's theory assumed that the rhythms of capitalism exert a one-way gravitational pull on the non-capitalist world. In fact, the two constantly interact, and any synthetic version of Kondratiev's theory would have to take account of that. Towards the end of the seminar, a long-time Communist Party hack, the agrarian economist Myron Nachimson, weighed in on the political implications of long-wave theory. The obsession with long waves, he said, was ideological. Its purpose was to justify crisis as a normal state of affairs, to say that, quote, "We are dealing with an essentially perpetual movement of capitalism, first upwards and then downwards, and that it is not appropriate to dream of social revolution yet." Long cycles, Nachimson realized, would pose a big theoretical challenge to Bolshevism, whose premise was capitalism's imminent doom. The debate gets close to the heart of the problem with Kondratiev's work. 1. He saw the dynamics of capital investment as the primary cause of 50-year crises, yet his account of these dynamics was not sophisticated. 2. He assumed the non-capitalist world was the passive bystander to capitalist wave patterns when it was not. 3. At this point, though he saw each wave as a more complicated version of the next, he failed to situate the role of long waves within the ultimate destiny of capitalism. And there was another, related problem with Kondratiev's work, the data problem. It has pursued long cycle theory all the way through from the era of the slide rule to that of the Linux box. We must consider it here because the data problem has acted like a no-entry sign to Kondratiev's work for a generation. The challenge of random numbers. It's a mark of Kondratiev's ambition that the research group he ran employed one of the great mathematicians of the 20th century, Eugen Slutsky. And while Kondratiev wrestled with real data, Slutsky was engaged in a project of his own using random numbers. Slutsky showed that by applying a moving average to random data, you can easily generate wave patterns that look like real economic facts. To prove the point, he produced a wave pattern from random lottery numbers and superimposed it onto a chart of British growth statistics. When the one was squashed down onto the other, the shapes looked remarkably similar. In statistics, this is known as the Yule-Slutsky effect and is now understood to mean that the very act of smoothing out data generates spurious results. However, Slutsky believed the opposite. He believed that the emergence of regular wave patterns from random events was real, not just in economics, but in nature. He wrote, "It seems probable that an especially prominent role is played in nature by the process of moving summation with weights of one kind or another, where the magnitude of each consequence is determined by the influence not of one, but of a number of the preceding causes, as, for instance, the size of a crop is determined not by one day's rainfall, but by many. In other words, raindrops fall randomly into a square kilometre, but at the end of the season you have a crop yield that you can measure against last year's. The cumulative impact of random events can produce regular, cyclical patterns. By the time Slutsky wrote this, Kondratiev was becoming dangerous to know. In 1927, conflicts within the Soviet bureaucracy erupted into expulsions and street fighting. Historian Judy Klein points out that it would have been easy for Slutsky to disown Kondratiev, who was under suspicion as an avowed market socialist. Instead, he supported Kondratiev's basic theory. In fact, Slutsky's experiment added a crucial insight to long wave theory. He noted that waves generated by filtering random data do not repeat forever. As he computed them over time, the patterns would suddenly break down, an event he dubbed regime change. He wrote, "After a more or less considerable number of periods, every regime becomes disarranged, the transition to another regime occurring sometimes rather gradually, sometimes more or less abruptly, around certain critical points." To anybody interested in the long-range patterns in economics, the challenge posed by Slutsky's observation is clear. First, long waves may not be traceable to a tangible cause, whether it be innovation, external shocks, or the rhythms of capital investment. They may just be a regular feature of any complex economic system over time. Secondly, whatever the cause, we should expect regular wave patterns to break down and reset themselves. Slutsky himself believed this pattern of sudden breakdown could operate at two levels, inside the 10-year business cycle and across the 50-year-long cycles. But his work raises a third possibility. If industrial capitalism has produced a sequence of 50-year waves over a period of more than 200 years, then maybe, at some point, this too breaks down, inaugurating a regime change that leads to a whole different pattern. In the past 20 years, there has been a stats-driven backlash against Kondratiev. Various modern studies claim to show that if better smoothing out techniques are used, Kondratiev's waves simply disappear or become patchy. Others correctly point out that the long-term price fluctuations observed within the first three waves disappear once a sophisticated global marketplace emerges after 1945. However, given the massive amount of extra data and better methods that we possess, it should be possible to detect Kondratiev waves in the global growth statistics. In 2010, the Russian researchers Koratayev and Cyril did just that. They used a technique called frequency analysis to show convincingly that there are powerful 50-year pulses in the GDP data. For the post-1945 period, they show that even the raw data contains clear evidence of an up phase after 1945 and a prolonged down phase beginning in 1973. In fact, using the IMF's definition of a recession, 6 months during which global growth dips below 3%, they calculate that while there were no recessions for the period 1945 to 73, there have been six recessions since 1973. They are confident that the Kondratiev wave is present in world GDP figures after 1870 and observable in Western economies before that. There is more evidence for the existence of long cycles in the work of Cesare Marchetti, an Italian physicist who analysed historical data on energy consumption and infrastructure projects. The result, he concluded, in 1986, quotes, "very clearly reveals cyclic or pulsed behaviour in many areas of economic life, with cycles lasting roughly 55 years. Marchetti rejects the idea that these are waves, or primarily economic, preferring to call them long-term pulses in social behaviour. But, he says, signals that are unclear in economics become, quotes, crystal clear when the physicals are analysed. Marchetti says that the clearest evidence for long cycles lies in the pattern of investment in physical communication grids, taking canals, rail, paved roads, and airline networks as his examples. He showed how the build-out of each peaked roughly 50 years after the previous technology had done so. On this basis, he predicted that a new type of grid should appear around the year 2000. Though writing a mere 14 years before the millennium, he could not guess what it would be. Today, we have the answer: the information network. There is, then, physical and economic evidence that a 50-year pattern exists. The wave shapes generated by such a pattern or pulse are of secondary importance to the fact of the pattern's existence. To an economist, they indicate deeper processes at work, just as for the astrophysicist, a black hole can be detected only by the movement of matter around it. And here's why it's important. Kondratiev gave us a way of understanding mutations within capitalism. Left-wing economics had been looking for a process that led only to breakdown. Kondratiev showed how the threat of breakdown usually leads to adaptation and survival. The problem with Kondratiev remains his account of the economic force that drives the cycle and how this relates to the ultimate destiny and longevity of the system. It is this we have to fix. Saving Kondratiev. I once gave a lecture on Kondratiev to 200 economics students at a British university. They had not a clue who or what I was talking about. "Your mistake," said an academic to me after the talk, "was to mix micro and macroeconomics. They're just not used to that." Another lecturer, whose job it was to teach economic history, had never heard of Kondratiev. But they'd heard of Joseph Schumpeter. In Business Cycles, 1939, Schumpeter argued that capitalism is shaped by interlocking wave cycles ranging from a short wave, 3 to 5 year cycle produced by the build-up of stocks inside businesses, through to the 50-year waves Kondratiev had observed. In a tortuous logical exercise, Schumpeter ruled out the credit cycle, external shocks, changes in taste, and what he termed growth as causes of the 50-year cycle. Instead, he argued, quotes, "Innovation is the outstanding fact in the economic history of capitalist society and is largely responsible for most of what we would at first sight attribute to other factors." He then supplied a detailed history of each of Kondratiev's waves as an innovation cycle. The first is triggered by the invention of the factory system in the 1780s, the second driven by railways from 1842, the third by a cluster of innovations we now call the Second Industrial Revolution in the 1880s and 90s. Schumpeter took Kondratiev's wave theory and made it highly attractive to capitalists. In his version, the entrepreneur and the innovator drive each new cycle. Conversely, periods of breakdown are the result of innovation becoming exhausted and capital being hoarded in the finance system. For Schumpeter, crisis is a necessary feature of the capitalist system in that it promotes the, quotes, "creative destruction of old and inefficient models." And though Kondratiev was largely forgotten, Schumpeter's work has lived on as a kind of religious insight, a techno-determinist account of boom and bust that mainstream economists can turn to at times of crisis when their normative beliefs fail. The most prominent modern follower of Schumpeter, Carlota Perez, has used the tech-driven theory to urge policymakers to give state support to infotech, biotech and green energy, with the promise of a new golden age to follow sometime in the 2020s once the next wave takes off. Perez added some refinements to wave theory that are useful for understanding the present phase. The most important is her idea of the, quotes, techno-economic paradigm. It is, she argues, not enough for there to be a cluster of innovations at the start of each wave cycle, nor for these innovations merely to interact with each other. A new common sense guiding the diffusion of each revolution, she writes, has to emerge, a recognizable logic of the new that enables the replacement of one set of technologies and business practices with another. But by dating the waves from the invention of key technologies, not their rollout, Perez departs both from Kondratiev and Schumpeter. And she proposes a different causal sequence. Innovators invent. Financiers get excited and speculate. It all ends in tears and the state moves in, regularizing the situation so that a golden age of high growth and productivity can occur. Perez's supporters say this date sequence is just a repackaging of Schumpeter, with the start point of each wave dragged 25 years earlier. But it is more than that. For her, the primary focus of long wave theory is, quotes, the eruption and gradual assimilation of each technological revolution, not the upswings and downswings in GDP that were the focus for Kondratiev. As a result, she is left with all kinds of consistency problems. Why is the fourth wave, 1909 to 71, nearly 70 years long? Because the policy response to the 1930s depression did not bear fruit until 1945, she answers. Why does the clear sequence innovation, bubble, bust happen twice between 1990 and 2008? Again, she answers, because of policy mistakes. Perez's version of wave theory stresses the response of governments at crisis points, but puts very little emphasis on the struggles between classes or the distribution of wealth. In an almost pure inversion of Kondratiev, the economics are driven by technology and technology is driven by governments. The attraction of the tech-driven wave theory is that the evidence for it is tangible. Clusters of innovation do take place before the start of long waves, and their synergies can be documented. It is materialist in that it sees revolutions and changes in social attitudes as the product of something deeper. New technologies bring to power what Schumpeter called new men, who in turn bring with them their own tastes and norms of consumption. But Kondratiev was right to reject technology as the driver of big change. It is adequate for describing the start of 50-year cycles, but does not fully explain why the clustering of inventions takes place, nor why a new social paradigm emerges, nor indeed why the wave ends. If we stick with Kondratiev and extend his sequence of long cycles to the present, drawing on Marchetti's physicals and much better data than that which was available in the 1920s, we can draw the following outline. Industrial capitalism has gone through four long cycles, leading to a fifth whose takeoff has stalled. 1. 1790 to 1848. The first long cycle is discernible in the English, French and US data. The factory system, steam-powered machinery and canals are the basis of the new paradigm. The turning point is the depression of the late 1820s, the 1848-51 revolutionary crisis in Europe, mirrored by the Mexican War and Missouri Compromise in the USA, forms a clear punctuation point. 2. 1848 to the mid-1890s. The second long cycle is tangible across the developed world and, by the end of it, the global economy. Railways, the telegraph, ocean-going steamers, stable currencies and machine-produced machinery set the paradigm. The wave peaks in the mid-1870s, with financial crisis in the USA and Europe leading to the Long Depression, 1873 to 96. During the 1880s and 90s, new technologies are developed in response to economic and social crises coming together at the start of the third cycle. 3. 1890s to 1945. In the third cycle, heavy industry, electrical engineering, the telephone, scientific management, and mass production are the key technologies. The break occurs at the end of the First World War, the 1930s depression, followed by the destruction of capital during the Second World War, terminate the downswing. 4. Late 1940s to 2008. In the fourth long cycle, transistors, synthetic materials, mass consumer goods, factory automation, nuclear power, and automatic calculation create the paradigm, producing the longest economic boom in history. The peak could not be clearer. The oil shock of October 1973, after which a long period of instability takes place, but no major depression. 5. In the late 1990s, overlapping with the end of the previous wave, the basic elements of the fifth long cycle appear. It is driven by network technology, mobile communications, a truly global marketplace, and information goods. But it has stalled, and the reason it has stalled has something to do with neoliberalism and something to do with the technology itself. This is just an outline a list of start and end points, technology clusters, and significant crises. To go any further, we need to understand the dynamics of capital accumulation better than Kondratiev did and in ways the techno-theorists barely touch. We need not only to understand that capitalism mutates, but also to understand what within the economy drives the mutations and what might limit them. Kondratiev gave us a way to understand what systems theorists call the meso level in economics, something between an abstract model of the system and its concrete history. He left us a better way to understand its mutations than the theories advanced by 20th century followers of Marx, who focused on external factors and doom scenarios. We're not done with Kondratiev yet, but to complete what he tried to do, we have to dive into a problem that has obsessed economics for more than a century. What causes crisis?